Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. Well, again, here we are. It's another week. It's another month. And this is what I affectionately would refer to as like the death month. February is always a challenging month in beekeeping because you're kind of in the home stretch. You're right there at the end of the winter, and all that hard work for the other, 10 months, I would say, like from April or so, March, April of the previous year, so 10 or 11 months, all the way up to now. And here you are, you're waiting, you're starting to see, like I think we were talking in the Discord room the other day, yesterday, the pollen alerts have started kicking in, and pollen.com, if you're not signed up, I'm not an affiliate, I get no money or anything like that, but if you sign up on pollen.com, put your zip code in, they'll email you every day and they'll let you know what's coming into bloom and why your nose is running and your throat sore and all that kind of good stuff. So it's worth checking out. That's always my first indicator every year that things are about to get going. That's actually kind of like my Zyrtec alarm. But yeah, this is a tough month because the bees are coming up on the end of the resources. And, you know, as bees start to catch those warm days, you know, you get the days in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, to them, they're thinking like, oh, okay, cool. It's time to start raising brood. It's time to start ramping up in the spring. And they kind of go back and forth because now you got some of the tree pollens and things are starting to come in. So they think it's time to rear brood. Then they try to do that. And then you have 2 or 3 weeks where it's in the 30s and the brood dies. I mean, it's a very vulnerable time. And it is a time to, you hear me say a lot, like, just leave them alone, leave them alone, leave them alone. We're getting into that time, and again, it depends on where you live. You know, that time may have happened in January where you are. It might not be till next month in different places, but you do need to start thinking about being a bit aggressive here in the spring just to make sure you don't have any overwintering issues, any, you know, at least last minute. You know, I'll give you an example of, you guys probably all know Cayman Reynolds. He does the big, you know, Bee Honey show. Just did one out in Louisville, Kentucky, first week of January. And he shows up in my feed, I think it was yesterday, and I watched a video, and he's got these nukes. He's overwintering these nukes. And, you know, that's a great example. You know, I give people a hard time for feeding, not because there aren't scenarios where feeding makes sense. It's just, it doesn't have to be a hobbyist beekeeper's go-to. It shouldn't always be like, okay, well, I've got to throw feed in. It's that time of year. Every year I have to put that stuff in November or whatever. He has overwintered nukes. They are already smaller. They have a smaller cluster. They have smaller space to store resources, and they have to make it just as long as any other colony would. That absolutely makes sense to feed those smaller colonies. So he was putting some pollen patties down. I think he might have had like an open feeder with some pollen sub or something like that. I don't know, but he's doing his inspections. And I remember the first one I saw in the video, it was, I don't think there was more than maybe a half a frame of honey on it, something like that. So him being there to intervene was critically important. And you do need to do that with nukes. That is an area where you're going to have to take a little bit of a more proactive measure. But anyway, quick sidebar for that. I want to come back. I'm going to talk to you about today. Today's discussion is why you only hear me talk about the Langstroth hive, right? There's a lot of options out there and you hear me all the time. 8 frame, 10 frame, it looks like this. Here's a hive body, here's a frame, here's, you know, foundation. But I'm never talking about the other things. So I want to go through that, the reasoning kind of behind that. But before we really dive in, I wanted to congratulate everybody because I don't know if you're aware of the Podcast Weekly that reports on various aspects of all the podcasts throughout the world. But this is 3 weeks running. So special congratulations to all of you. 3 weeks running with you guys being the best looking listeners in the world. So you should be really proud of yourselves. That's an awesome accomplishment. And I appreciate you being here for that. All right, let me give you a couple of updates. And there's one more thing I keep saying that I feel like. But at the end, I'm going to talk about a subject that might be a tad bit sensitive. And I'm not even sure. I might not do it at all. I'm kind of on the fence here. We'll figure it out as we get there. I will give you a heads up if it's time to keep the kids away or whatever, but there's something that happened and I don't know. I just feel like I want to talk about it and it's not bee related, but I'll give you a heads up when we get there, and it'll be at the very end in case you need to bail out. Okay, so a couple of admin things. The YouTube channel is really growing steadily, so I do appreciate all of you taking the time to go in there and check out some videos and things. But let me know, like, let me know what you need, because I have a list that I'm going to work off of this spring of just, you know, recording things that people have specifically asked about. And I want to make sure that we're getting your questions answered. So let us know on that one. And in line with that, I've started doing some writing. I actually wrote a long time ago. I did an op-ed for a paper once a week for about a year, and it was really fun. It was cool being able to just write about whatever I wanted to, but there's a lot of little quick bee topics that come up, and I'm trying to find a way to capture them and put them in one place, because I'm looking at my notes, for example, that I'm using this system that I absolutely love. It's a free software called Obsidian, O-B-S-I-D-I-A-N. I love the way it organizes everything, and it makes it really easy. But almost something like that, like in a web type version. Now, there is a gentleman, he's probably going to be really upset with me, and he's going to email me. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he has put together a really cool wiki. So if you are interested in that, it's a beekeeping wiki with lots of stuff. You can go in, you can edit it, you can add sections, and just it's a community thing. Like, nobody's making money off of it or monetizing it or anything like that. But I'm thinking of almost doing something that would sort of complement that, to kind of give like almost a web-based version of lots of just different how-tos, tips and tricks, reviews. Like, there are products that I have that I can compare and say, hey, look, here's these five things I have. I like this one the best. They all work, and here's why. Like, maybe smokers or different types of hive tools, or, you know, I might even just, not today, but if I get to a point where if we're able to find the success that I think that, that what we're working on here will get to, I'm just going to go on to like Amazon as an example, buy five different ones, use them for a week, and then do a full write-up and explanation. So that's the same kind of thing. If you have things you want to learn more about that might not necessarily be video-based, but it's educational that I can document and post on this, I've got a couple of domains I just picked up for this purpose. So again, let me know about that as well, and we'll see if we can get that incorporated. The apprentice program, everything is on track right now. I think last time I mentioned it, I was waiting on my review panel to get back to me. So they've got everything they need. I've got about 2/3 of what I gave them has come back to me with all the feedback. So I'm going to have the last third of that by the end of the week. Got to make some corrections and adjustments. And they are being the pains in the butt that I specifically asked them to be when I hired them. And they're challenging me and pushing me in ways that are a tiny bit uncomfortable, but I want it to be the best, and in order to be the best, you've got to bring the best people involved, get the right people involved, and you have to challenge each other. So that is still on track. The bulk of the recording will kick off on that, I think, next week, and we'll run that till the end of March. We'll run it till probably mid-March and get that all wrapped up. It's so exciting. I'm really excited about it. And this is going to be discussed, by the way. This particular subject about why I only talk about Langstroth, I'm going to talk about a whole bunch of different options in that course, but I don't do it here in this forum, and there's a reason that we're going to kind of jump into in just a second. And the last thing in my notes, there is a guy that I worked for years ago named Paul, and I mentioned him in one of the early episodes about how I got into beekeeping. I also mentioned it in the YouTube video called like How I Started My Journey or something like that. But Paul used to be my supervisor back like 2008 through 2010, something like that. And then we were teammates at a different company that was like a sister company from 2011 to 2013. Anyway, he and I have been friends for a really long time. Super guy. And we were chatting a while back, and he has kind of an interesting story and journey, just like a lot of us do. And he's a great storyteller. The line of work that we were in together was a lot of kind of storytelling around IT solutions and designing and just listening to people and helping them solve problems. I mean, that was what we were paid to do, is have people come and go, hey, we're having this really big problem. We listen, we make suggestions, we design a solution, and we hopefully get them to buy it. But anyway, Paul's a great guy. He's been a good friend and mentor, and I got nothing but good things to say about him. Years ago, Paul decided, kind of like the decision that I made within the past couple of years, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not doing IT anymore. I got to find more meaning and more purpose. And the money will just have to figure its way out, but we're just doing something different. So he went to medical school, became a physician's assistant. He's doing that. He also is a diver. He's like a, I'm going to mess this up. He's like a, I don't know, like certified master diver technician of all things, underwater welder, whatever. I don't know what all he does, but he dove in the Navy. He's been diving for a really long time. And while he was doing this certification, he fell and completely jacked up his shoulder, had to have surgery, a lot of stuff going on with it. But anyway, Paul recently started a podcast, and the first episode is a pretty like generic intro episode, like most of them. The second one is titled, I Blame Jeff and Jesus. And this is because he and I were talking, and he was at home trying to figure out what he was going to do with himself with this recent injury and follow-up surgery. And I was like, hey, if you got a little downtime, man, start a podcast. You know, you've got a lot of cool stories. You're a good storyteller. It's an interesting journey. I said, I'm not an expert in that space. I just ramble for a half hour to an hour about things that I think are kind of neat. And sometimes people like it and sometimes they don't, and get used to people telling you suck, and everything else will kind of figure itself out. So he did this, and he's a couple episodes in. But anyway, again, it's Medical Mariner, Inc., and his name is Paul. And if nothing else, check out episode 2. It's kind of funny where he talks about how he and I met. And good guy, good storyteller. I don't know what's beyond episode 2, but it's definitely worth checking out. Okay, so the Langstroth Hive. Like, why do I always talk about Langstroth and I don't talk about anything else? Beekeeping is a really, really big pain in the butt. There is so much that you have to learn. And what's challenging, what really makes it tough, is you're never done. And that's good. It's always good to challenge yourself. It's always good to step outside the comfort zone and do new things and do different things. Beekeeping is kind of, it's so much more extreme than that, because what happens is, on the surface, it's the most simple concept. Take box. Stick bees in box. Don't kill bees. Get honey. Lather, rinse, repeat. It's a relatively simple little formula there. There are so many details that nobody really knows. I don't think you know until, I don't even know if you ever really completely figure it out. I mean, there are a lot of people who have a lot more experience than I do. And they keep telling me, as we talk about things and we have discussions and we're joking around, and they're telling me, like, I love doing what we do in beekeeping because I learn all the time. It never gets dull. It's very dynamic. You know, one of the areas that is probably most dynamic with it is trying to keep up with, you know, varroa mites as an example, or other IPM related things. There is a, I'm just going to do a really, really brief sidebar, but there is a bug kind of like varroa. It's called Trobelaelaps. It's a mite. It's native to Asia. It's a natural parasite of the brood of the giant honeybees of Asia. They are Apis dorsata, if you're on the scientific side of things. But that bug and an infestation of that bug can cause severe damage and disruption to honeybee colonies. It's not here in the U.S. At some point in time, just like varroa, just like other things, it's going to end up here, right? And that's just one example of how dynamic and ever-changing that the world of beekeeping is. So that's what makes it cool and neat. You're always going to be challenged. You're always going to be engaged. And, you know, the unfortunate part is some people are like, yeah, you know, I just want to enjoy them. I just want to watch them. I don't really care. You can't even get away with that. There was a time years ago, and I remember a friend of mine, you know, telling me, he's like, yeah, I think I've got some bees still back in the back of the yard. I think a colony showed up last season. I think they're still there. You could just have a box that was there. Bees would be hanging out there every couple of years, every few years. They would supersede the queen and bring a new queen in. And, you know, 10, 12 years later, you still have this beehive sitting there. That's pretty much not the case anymore, right? With varroa and with everything else that could possibly impact them, it's difficult to have that. So the idea of being a passive participant in beekeeping really is sort of non-existent. But being able to always learn new things is great. When we look at year number one in beekeeping, you know, and I think back, and again, this is something that I've had to like reprogram my brain, because think about if somebody said to you, like, all right, I need you to teach like a 4-year-old or however old someone is when they start riding a bike. I think it was around 3 or 4. Okay, you're going to teach this person to ride a bike. I did this with my girls with driving, right? Like my oldest, I was like, God, how do I teach her this? Like my dad years ago, he was part of the Army Executive Flight Detachment. So many years ago before, sorry, I had to go on a sidebar. You guys know me. But the Army years ago was in charge of presidential flight. So right now it's like Marine One. Well, back in like the late 70s, 80s, it was Army One. So my dad served under Nixon, Ford, Carter, and Reagan as they, you know, he was there during the transition off of Army One to Marine One. But as part of what he did is he had gone to a lot of the driving schools that the Secret Service had sent all of their agents and you know, personal protective details and things to those schools. Well, that's kind of what he started doing after they were winding down Army One, transitioning to Marine One. He was still a part of the Secret Service as a, he was still attached to the Secret Service through White House Transportation. So like, this is the guy who taught me a lot of my driving. So like, we're literally, there's a thing I remember as a kid called a J-turn, like where you back up really, really fast. And then like you slam the wheel hard to the right. And as you're doing that, you're taking it out of reverse and going into drive. I was doing it in a manual transmission vehicle, but you're like, whoa, kind of going backwards, slam the wheel, do the shift the other way and take off. So like, here I am at like 15 and 6 months, 15 and 8 months, whatever it was. And I'm learning how to do J turns and how to break, you know, roadblocks and stuff like this. So this is the guy who taught me to drive. And I'm now with like my 16-year-old or almost 16-year-old first daughter. And I'm like, ooh, how do we do this? Thinking back to all the old driver's ed days and all that kind of stuff. And so it's tricky. And this is exactly what I'm experiencing now with the apprentice course, where it's like, okay, flush your brain out, pretend like you know nothing. Okay, what is this box? What is this thing you're putting in the box? How many do you put in there? Why? Hey, somebody online said, I only use 9 frames. Why would I only use 9? You know, stuff like that. So you're getting inundated with so much information as a new beekeeper that I've always felt like if I start telling you like, hey, there's 5 different, I'm making it up, there's 5 different types of hives you can get, just get whatever you like. Get whatever somebody at the bee club tells you or whatever. That's going to end up being, in my opinion, really bad advice. I recommend the Langstroth hive because it's really easy to use. You can get bigger and smaller boxes and frames depending on your physical ability or any limitations you might have. Parts are readily available, whether it's like, I said, there was a guy at the old bee club who I used to go over, and he had a shed in his backyard and he had all this brand new hardware that he would stock, and it was great, really convenient. And, you know, so whether it was buying from him or buying online, it was just very, very readily available. It's easy to scale. You can go from, let's say you decided you standardized on all medium hive bodies. You can really easily go from 2 to 3 to 6, you know, and just keep stacking them up, right? The maintenance on it is relatively easy. You know, sometimes you need to do different scrubbing and cleaning activities and things like that. But, you know, it does a good job for the most part of mimicking what you would see in a tree. You know, the bees do like to move vertically, as is, you know, indicated and evident by what you see them living in the wild in hollowed out trees and those cavities and things like that. And that's where, honestly, I feel like the 8-frame really is a slightly better fit. And, you know, in hindsight, I've had such good results with my 5-frame nukes, just stacking them vertically, that I think that if I were to start all over again, I would probably standardize on just 8-frame Langstroth hardware. And that would be really great, I think, for the home hobbyist type beekeeper. But anyway, with that, you know, the mimicking of the hive, that's another just kind of bonus to it, but it's easy. It's easy. It's simple. It's very straightforward. There are challenges with it, obviously, and I'm not going to dive deep into all the challenges. We're going to cover it in the course, and I'll maybe take an excerpt from that and copy a video online so you can see some of my opinions on that. But that's the real reason. I don't want to inundate you with a whole lot of information on a whole bunch of things and then make you feel like you got to make a choice. Langstroth is a great approach for new beekeepers, and that's what I recommend. Now, let's go ahead and take just a few minutes, and we're going to run through and I'm going to mention a couple of other options. So you have a top bar hive, and it is exactly what it sounds like. You have just a top bar. So if you think about a regular frame that you would see in a Langstroth hive, it has a top bar, bottom bar, and two supporting sides. And then in the middle of that, you would have either a wax foundation or maybe a plastic foundation. And that same frame could be entirely made of plastic. It just depends on what you're using. The top bar hive just has the top bar. And that's very similar, I think, to like the Waré style hive as well. I think that the top bar, the Waré, the Bee Barn, I think a lot of those really operate on the same principle. I think, the Bee Barn, I think, is different. The Bee Barn is basically just like two deeps kind of stuck together, and you have one huge, massive frame. I think it looks super cool, but I'll go through all these real quick. But one of the nice things with the top bar and the Waré, some of these are a little bit more natural. Kind of they're like the top bar particularly, you're basically putting a frame and a cavity very much like they would see in the wild. Of course, no frame, but you know, they would have this open cavity to explore and do what they want to do. I think that was developed. I know the Waré was back in the 50s, but these things were developed a long time ago. And I think that when you look at the need to inspect and to get in and to look and do things and to be very actively engaged and involved in the care of the hives, these don't make that easy. It's much more difficult. Quite often, those frames are significantly heavier than they would be if you're on a Langstroth kind of setup. And again, the parts and availability of pieces and things, sometimes they're not necessarily standardized, or they are just a little bit more difficult to find. So as a natural approach where you're just going to kind of let them explore the space and do what they want to do, I always have this vision of Will Ferrell and Christopher Walken.
I'll be honest, fellas, it was sounding great, but I could have used a little more cowbell. So, let's take it again. And Gene.
Yeah.
Really explore the studio space this time.
You got it, Bruce.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
Explore the space.
Okay.
I like what I'm hearing.
It gives them the opportunity to kind of move throughout and do whatever they want to do. And I do like that aspect of it. Now, there's also another one I wanted, and forget about whatever the brands are, different flavors of the same thing, but whether you call it a horizontal hive or the Lane's hive or however you want to define it, the horizontal hives are actually kind of neat to me. I'm thinking from the mindset of somebody who might have a disability, like maybe you are in a wheelchair or you are in some kind of a, you know, mobile chair where you can't necessarily get up high to do things. If you could reach over, or you could reach to the side, or maybe lean forward. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think about, this is a separate discussion that I had with Hives for Heroes the other day, and we were talking about accessibility and training around veterans and first responders that have disabilities. It was a really good discussion that we'll talk about at a different time when a few things come into place. But that's what I think about with the horizontal hive. The idea of having something that's really accessible, it's down low, particularly better, I would think, because I don't have any, but I would think it would be better for maybe teaching and training people or educating young children, people who want to be, you know, or are naturally just, you know, lower to the ground there or closer to the hive. So I can see where there might be some benefit, but I also know that, you know, those horizontal hives, that what I think I seem to remember is there's an issue with the natural heat movement where the heat will tend to, you know, rise, obviously, in a traditional hive. And in the horizontal hives, it's not the same heat dynamic. Like instead of them moving up and accessing honey, they're moving over and around. It's just a different type of movement for the cluster, and there's a different heat dynamic to it. Like I said, it's not something that appeals to me. If you use it and you like it, by all means, stick with it. But anyway, that's really all I had. It was not intended to be a super long discussion today. I really just wanted to just let you know, because several people have reached out and been like, hey, what do you think of this hive? What do you think of that one? Hey, can you do a podcast on this one or that one? And like I said, I just feel like it's information overload. It's too much. There's too many options. I like the idea of saying, just use this hive tool here. You know, and I've used that example of the one that has the J hook on it. Like a lot of people love that J, and I thought it was really cool. I was like, oh my God, yeah, this is great. I can just use it on the corner and hook and use that J hook on the tool to pop the frame up. That's really awesome. And probably like 95% of the time, it really is. I don't think anybody actually gave a little footnote there that tells you make sure that you address the propolis. Now, for those of you who are newer and don't really understand what's going on, the bees are going to line everything inside of your hive bodies and frames and everything with a sticky, sterile, basically. It's an effort to kind of sterilize and clean everything, but it's a sticky kind of substance that they apply to everything, and it just helps to make it a more sanitary kind of space. They will literally stick everything to everything else. So what's going to happen with you as you get all of your hardware in and you put your gear on and you go outside and you do a simulated inspection and you're like, wow, this is cool. This is really easy. I'll just pull this little frame out here and pull this little frame out there. Wow, that was pretty cool. And then you're going to do the same thing about a month or two in and you're going to be like, I can't get this frame out. It's stuck to the hive body. That's what I'm talking about right now. If you're going to do an inspection, you have to use a few little tricks. And again, we can cover this in a video, probably would be the best way to do it. But there are a couple of little tricks of the trade to kind of loosen things up a little bit before you remove that frame. So again, that J-hook style hive tool is not a bad hive tool. You need to make sure that your frames are not completely packed with propolis and stuck inside, you know, all over the place and unable to move. Because the first time I used it was on a relatively deeply stuck, if that's the right way to describe it, frame. And I literally ripped the top bar off the frame. And I was like, I am not a fan of this hive tool anymore. You don't come to my apiary. But it's really an operator issue. And that it is something to kind of keep in mind. You know, we talk about all these other traits that I think are the critical traits. I used to say five. I've added number six with Varroa resistance. But that is a trait of bees about their propolis production. You know, some bees will create more propolis than others. And, you know, there are certainly pros and cons to that. But just being mindful of again, there's so many different options. Get a basic hive tool and use it. Get a basic smoker and use it. Get a basic bee, you know, what do you call it? A basic bee suit and use it. There are so many people in the beekeeping world, and I've seen this across every industry I've ever been a part of, like IT, real estate, medical, like all of them. There is an entire industry that is developed around the people who do the things just to sell them stuff to do the things. Real estate was the craziest one. Like I remember my broker was always bringing in like different people, which was great. It was great to get you connected with resources and things. That part was great. But you had people who do leads. You had people that come in and do staging. You have people that will come in and do the, you know, the inspections, and then you need an accountant. And you have all these people that want to talk to you because, you know, you are in that business. They don't want to do that line of work, but they want to sell you all the stuff you have to use to do that line of work. So now the challenge becomes, can people convince you to part with your money in order to support their way of life? And that's what happens in beekeeping a lot. Hey, there's this widget that you just have to have. It's the most amazing thing in the world. Everybody's going to be standardizing on this in the next 5 to 10 years. Oh, wow, that's really neat. Cool, right? If that's your thing and you like to always try the latest and greatest newest thing, then by all means do that. But just be mindful. There is a ton of stuff in beekeeping that is completely useless. Like it has no value. And people will try to convince you regularly. Well, this is why I say it all the time, and I'm going to keep saying it till I'm done with everything and I walk away. But listen to me. Listen to 10 other people, right? Listen to other resources. And then from all the things you hear, then you go and do. And then you formulate your own strategy. And again, give feedback. I mean, I'm doing this because I'm fully prepared for people to be like, yeah, that's not really cool, man. I disagree with that, you know, and I want to learn too, right? I'm going to keep learning. That's what I said earlier. This is a learning area. It's a learning field. And if you're not moving forward, you're probably falling behind. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and give everybody the warning here. I'm going to talk for just a second. So this is where if you had little kids around or whatever, this might be a good time to push them to the side or pause and resume later. So I mentioned earlier that I had a discussion with Hives for Heroes. And it was a really good discussion. I reached out to them because they have a program. And if you're not familiar with this, it's pretty exceptional. What they do is, let's say you're a active duty service member, a veteran, first responder, whatever the case might be. You say, hey, I want to be a beekeeper. They will help you get aligned to a mentor and help teach you the kind of the tricks of the trade and all of that. But what they also do is if you sign up for a bee program, They have a list of approved programs and you can get reimbursed for it. So you basically go sign up, you pay whatever the fee is, and you provide them with a, you know, your DD-214. If you're military, I don't know what they require from other things. Maybe if you're a paramedic, maybe you're National Registry paramedic or Virginia Department of Fire programs or whatever your state Department of Fire program certificates are. You may have to provide some kind of, obviously proof of service, but you send that information to them with your course completion and they're going to cut you a check. And it's really cool. It's really neat. And there's a lot of it that I'm really fascinated and impressed with. So I had the opportunity to catch up with one of the co-founders the other day. And I'm not going to go into the details of the discussion because anytime I really mention a person, particularly by name or the contents of a discussion that was had, I would prefer to have their consent. And I know that the gentleman would probably be like, absolutely, Jeff, talk all day long. If you're bringing positive attention to our organization, I'm all for it. I'm sure he would say that. But in the absence of having that dialogue and discussion with him, I'm not going to say, you know, who he is or the specifics of the conversation. But the focus of that organization, in addition to beekeeping and getting veterans involved in beekeeping, is we all kind of recognize the therapeutic value in beekeeping. And this is something I was going back and fixing mistakes in episodes. And I went back, I was listening, I think it was episode 49, if I remember correctly from my notes. I'd had kind of a discussion back then and I kind of outlined this vision, this idea that I had, and that vision and idea is starting to come to fruition. And I think that we're going to have some kind of a partnership with Hives for Heroes. And I say that extremely, very, very loosely. So I want to make sure I'm crystal clear about this. I'm not endorsing them. They're not endorsing me. We're not exchanging logos. We're not exchanging Christmas cards. You know, I'm not going to go to their kids' high school graduation. There's, you know, it's not anything crazy right now. What we're trying to do is find ways that we can bring value to each other, complement the efforts and activities that we're both engaged in. And with that, I recognized that I was not going to be able to do everything I wanted to do in the way I wanted. My original plan was, hey, I make really good money and I got a surplus of cash and I'm going to build this facility and here's what I'm going to do and here's how I'm going to do it. And that was several years ago. And when I decided to do this full time and to take on beekeeping and education and all of this as a full time thing, I walked away from a lot of that surplus money and all those things. And I had no path forward. I didn't know how I was going to achieve the goals and the ideas that I had, like outside of the podcast, outside of what we're doing now and the educational stuff. I still had that bigger dream and vision, and I wasn't really sure how we were going to get there. And by the grace of God, I was having a lunch. It was some of my wife's family. It was her uncle, his wife, their daughter, their son-in-law, two of their children, their grandchildren, so it was their daughter's children. We had lunch the other day. They happened to be in town. And my aunt-in-law, I was telling her kind of what I'm doing, and she says, well, why don't you start a nonprofit? And I said, well, I'm interested in that, but I really don't want to deal with the IRS. We've had a tumultuous. We've had a very challenging relationship with the IRS in the past, and I really just don't want to deal with them. And I've been told that nonprofits are heavily targeted and under a lot of scrutiny. And I just told her, I said, I just don't have the mental energy to deal with the IRS. And she said, well, look, if you're doing the right thing and you're documenting everything and you're playing by the rules, like, it's actually a really great way to go. You would be able to open things up to a lot of corporate and federal grants. And she says, I'm pretty sure that you can accomplish everything that you want to do accomplish, and you wouldn't have to lay out, you know, every penny of your life savings to make it happen. So I started thinking about it and doing research, and, you know, long story short, that's what I did. I saw an email pop up while we were talking today about my articles of incorporation being approved. And because for those of you who don't know, it was new to me too. You create a corporation that is a, what do they call it? Like a non-stock corporation or something like that. But you have to create a corporation, and then from that corporation, you get an EIN, employee ID number from the IRS, and then you submit a form to the IRS. It's like a something easy. I can't remember the name of the form, but you submit the form to the IRS, and then it takes 2 to 4 weeks, and they approve you as a nonprofit. That's sort of the high level. So I have secured domains. I've built a website. I've got the incorporation done. I've got the mailing and everything taken care of. And there's going to be a lot of effort that goes into that. It's going to be a big deal. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of work, but it's definitely going to be done in conjunction with, again, very loosely tied to in some ways with Hives for Heroes. But I'll probably do a separate longer discussion once everything is completely done and fully in place. It's something that I'm pretty excited about. I like it a lot. I'm happy to, I'm very fortunate. I think fortunate is the better word. I'm very fortunate to be able to be a part of something that we're creating here. And essentially what it's going to end up being is, you know, a facility that will allow for veterans, first responders, and you know, people who are having some real serious challenges to do day-long, weekend-long, and even week-long retreats. And again, I'm not going to get into all the details quite yet, but it's all around beekeeping and the therapy of beekeeping, and it's pretty cool. The reason that I kind of went off on that a little bit today is because, you know, there's this huge problem in the veteran community with 22 veterans committing suicide every day. And I was thinking about this the other night. There was a guy, his mother, I should say the mom is local to my community, and her son, I think he was about 45 years old, U.S. Army Ranger, former Ranger, killed himself. And you know, that kind of always hits home. I mean, anytime it's a veteran, but I joined the Army. Like I wanted to be a Ranger. I went to Fort Stewart, Georgia to go to Hunter Army Airfield to join the 1st of the 75th Ranger Regiment. I had some automotive problems on the way down and I took a different path and it got me to where I am today. So it all worked out, but I hate when I hear it. I hate it. Every time I hear it, it just drives me nuts. And I think about, I spend a lot of time kind of digging into the why and trying to understand it. And I know that, you know, I've seen it a lot. I've seen it in myself. I've seen it in my friends. I've seen it in people I've known over the years. Like we're different. Like, and it's not even everybody. You know, there are some people that will serve and it's just like having a job at McDonald's for 3 years or something like that. And full disclosure, like I'm not picking on McDonald's. I actually worked there in high school for like 2 years, but some people just literally like coast through and like none of it has an impact and they just get out and go back to life and everything is fine. Like they just tuned it out. And then there's others that just, whether it's through the service or the training or the experiences or the, you know, whatever it might be, there's something that is just different. And I think that there's a big challenge. It used to be, I mean, it's a mental health challenge, obviously, but it used to be a stigma that was tied to it. And if you went and you sought help and you asked, like, hey, I'm having a problem. I need help. I'm feeling kind of messed up. It was a big deal and it was kind of frowned upon. And you almost had two pieces of that. You had the, no, it's okay, but it's really not, and it's frowned upon. And then there was the, it's okay, really, please use it, and people wouldn't do it because there was the perception that it would be frowned upon. It's a separate little psychological exercise in and of itself, but I saw it in the intelligence community as well. Because back in the day, I'm sure it's changed significantly, but back in the day when I moved about in that space is the best thing to describe, I guess. There were people that lost clearances because they were having psychiatric problems. And I don't know the detail. I mean, was it schizophrenia, bipolar, you know, general psychosis, or was it, you know, like, hey, I'm a little depressed because of whatever happened. Like, I don't know the details of someone else's situations or any of those situations, but I remember hearing about that. So there were these sort of built-in societal and occupational things that would cause people to say, like, I'm not going to seek that help. I'm not going to do it. And it's just, it's a strange thing. I'm really having a hard time wrapping my arms around it because I like to solve problems. You know, I'm just inherently, I just want to solve problems. And I think that a lot of that is tied to just being a guy or being a man or whatever. I think that's like a man kind of thing. Like a gal will say something to a guy like, oh, this thing happened with my friend. It really drives me nuts. And the guy thinks like, oh, well, you're coming to me because you want me to solve this problem. And that's not the case. They just want to tell you about it. And they want you to listen and nod and say, wow, that's terrible. That took me like 30 years to figure that one out. But it's natural to me, you know, to want to try to fix something that is potentially broken. And, you know, I don't have the answer. And I don't think anybody has the answer. There's no, you know, like magic wand that we can wave to figure it out. But I just keep coming back to, I have another friend of mine who came to the house once and he was spending some time with the bees and he was just like, he just went nuts about them. He was just so impressed in how good he felt. Like he was like, man, I'm sitting here and I'm enjoying these bees. And like every time, I don't know, like, and it's funny too, because when you're getting stung, like you agitate a hive and do something a little bit, that makes them unhappy. Like they're going to let you know. And in those moments of like being stung and having them chase you around the yard and stuff, like those moments don't feel therapeutic. I will acknowledge that. But I think that we're all kind of collectively on to something because there's at least something that can help. And I have this vision in my mind of trying to find a way with this type of outreach that I'd like to do, you know, and some of these retreats that I want to set up about whether it's virtual or physically, you know, bringing people in who can provide some on-site counseling. It's not meant to be a counseling session. It's meant to be bee therapy and learning about bees, but being able to be like, oh, and by the way, you know, here's Marie. Marie lives locally and she's down here for the day. So if there's anybody has anything they'd like to talk about, Marie will be here all day. Feel free to pull her aside and she can spend an hour with you or whatever. I always have that mindset of nobody gets left behind. You know, and I just don't want anybody to feel like they are left behind. And whenever something happens, like what happened with this young man about a week ago or so, you know, there's nobody to blame. It's not his mom's fault, his dad's fault. Like it's not a blame thing. It's what can we do differently? How do we figure that out? How do we change that? How do we influence, impact? I don't know. It's a thing that I'm struggling with and I don't like it. And I don't have a solution. It drives me nuts. So I'm going to kind of wrap it up, I think, on that. So I would just ask all of you, you know, if you know somebody, it doesn't even matter. They don't have to be a veteran or a first responder or whatever it is. But if you know somebody who's having some challenges, they're having issues, sometimes it can be a text. Like sometimes it can just be a text that makes the difference. You know, there's a friend of mine I messaged the other day. Just out of the blue, I wanted to ask her about something. And she was like, yeah, I was kind of thinking about it. And I was like, holy crap. Like, no, that's not an option. Like, I just don't let those people go. Keep an eye on them. Drop them a note every now and then. Say hi. Let them know you're thinking about them. Share a funny memory you have with them from years ago, whatever it takes. But like I said, then we're not going to solve this problem. But I don't know. Maybe we can find a way to work together and figure things out. All right, everybody, I'm not going to try to bring you down here, and it sounds kind of depressing. I just wanted to kind of get it off my chest because it's driving me up a wall, and I just wish I had an answer for it. Okay, everybody, so next week, or I might even record it this week if I can, but we're looking at episode 130 coming up, single brood chambers versus double deep brood chambers. So this is a discussion that we've had, I think, you know, casually before, but I'm going to dive in a little bit more and just kind of go through the differences between the two, some pros and cons, and it's not a super elaborate and, you know, in-depth kind of concept, but we'll talk about it a little bit, have a fun chat, and like I said, feel free to check us out at YouTube. It's just youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies, N-E-W-B-E-E-S. Same thing on the website, beekeepingfornewbies.com. And they got access to the Discord room. There's a link in the Discord room there, and there's links to that. There's a link to a new Pinterest account because I'm going to start pinning, but I don't have anything in it yet. So feel free to go in there and follow, but you don't have to. Nothing's going to be there for a little while. I got some other high priority projects I'm working on. But outside of that, folks, take care, be kind to one another. Remember, that I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.